Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Well, the easing of the lockdown isn't working out too well for some people, is it? I'm not talking about the sensible people like you and me who can quite happily go for a drink and a bit of food, sit outside under a canopy and have a convivial afternoon exchanging ideas and debating the issues of the day. I'm not talking about the thousands of restaurant and pub owners who have spent a fortune to make sure they've created lovely environments where their customers can enjoy a few hours out of the house mixing with their friends, the ones they haven't seen for quite a long time. No, I'm talking about those rougher sections of society, those people who don't know how to behave, the kind of people that get physically violent when they're out and about, the kind of people that try and manhandle pub owners and try and stop them from entering their own premises just because they don't like their opinions. I'm talking, of course, about Labour Party heavies protecting their leader, Sir Keir Starmer, who rather unwisely decided to visit a pub yesterday in Bath where the landlord wasn't entirely impressed with his policies of locking up pubs and stopping him from doing any business. Was this the moment the leader of the opposition signed his own death warrant and basically ended his career as leader of the opposition? 0344 499 1000. Coming up, as the royal family and Prince William now jump on the football bandwagon, Rod Little joins us with his take on the Super League proposals that are upsetting football millionaires and multi-billion pound companies around the world. FIFA, a place where corruption was its middle name. FIFA, an organisation where people were actually arrested for what they did to award World Cups to places like Qatar. UEFA, who make £3 billion a year out of football and the Champions League, telling everybody else that they are greedy and they are run entirely by money. I think it's absolutely and utterly ridiculous. They still don't get it, do they? 0344 499 1000. Rod Little will be joining us, of course. He's a Millwall fan. I don't think there's any chance of them entering the Super League anytime soon. Later on, we're joined by Professor Carol Sikora with his take on the latest COVID numbers and where we're going with the variants. And we'll be asking why on earth Burger King are asking people to eat fewer burgers. Apparently, they want to save the planet now instead of actually selling burgers. So there goes the bacon double cheeseburger, presumably. And we'll be finding out why the police are doing exactly what we've been saying they've been doing all along, deliberately not arresting criminals and not meeting victims, according to a report from HM Inspectorate of Constabulary. Why? They're blaming it on coronavirus. Still, that hasn't stopped them from going after people breaching coronavirus regulations, has it? As ever, of course, we want to hear from you. You are the eyes and ears of the Independent Republic. Join the Home of Common Sense today by simply ringing this number, 0344 499 1000. You'll listen to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, the football story is still very much dominating the front pages. Prince joins the backlash over football Super League, the great game robbery. Number 10 joins attacks on breakaway football plan. My favourite one is on the front of the Daily Mirror, the fight for our game. And they quote Bill Shankly up in the gates of outside of Anfield in Liverpool. The socialism I believe in is everybody working for the same goal and everybody having a share in the rewards. That's how I see football. That's how I see life. Very nice, but hardly what's going on at Manchester City, hardly what's going on at Real Madrid, hardly what's going on at Juventus, and hardly what's going on at Manchester United, is it? Let's talk to Pauline Latham, Conservative MP for Mid Derbyshire. Pauline, very good morning to you.
Morning.
I'm quite staggered by the political kind of interest in this story. I don't know quite why anyone is in politics to try and protect a bunch of multi-millionaire footballers from going off and making even more millions and millions of pounds and playing in a different league, which isn't that different from the one they're already in.
I don't think it's so much that they're concerned about the multi-million pounds that are going around. I think they're more concerned about the fans and the fact that the fans will miss out in this. I follow Derby County, so we're not likely to go into this new Super League.
Well, you never know. Hope springs eternal, Pauline.
Absolutely. But we have to bring back Brian Clough, I think, to do that. but, I mean, I understand that it is such a big sport in this country that so many millions of fans will be so disappointed that their team will be less held to account, really, because they won't be thrown out if they go down, if they don't win enough matches. It leaves them able to coast.
Yeah, but is that really the issue? Is that really what the fans are saying, that they don't want Arsenal, for example? I mean, I've seen Piers Morgan tweeting he doesn't want Arsenal to be in a Super League because they have to earn it. I don't think that's really the way fans think. I think fans are worried that the club is going to be the beginning of a thin end of the wedge, and the club will end up being taken over by the league and it might be moved somewhere.
Well, I think that's another worry, that they could well be moved, and then they're going to have to start up again with a new name in their city for a new club.
Yeah.
And I think that is a worry. And it is down to grassroots and about what they want. And I don't think that they really do want this to happen. They don't want the big change it will bring. I'm no expert on football and finances in football, but it seems to me that it's one in the eye for the fans. And I just
I think the other thing, with my other problem with that is, though, that nobody said it was one in the eye for the fans when they started putting ticket prices up. Nobody said it was one in the eye for the fans when they started charging nearly £100 for replica kits for children and changing them every 2 minutes so they had to buy another one for the next season. You know, nobody stood up for the fans then. So why now?
Well, because this is probably a bigger change. I agree that the cost of kit for kids is huge and ridiculous. And I think parents get almost bullied into buying it for the children because every other child's got one, so they have to have one. And I think that's a real problem. The amount of money, I think really the biggest problem is that football has become such a multi-million pound deal, whatever angle you're at. Mm. And I think that's the major problem. It's not really good for the fans to be spending so much money on ticket prices. But when young footballers command so much, so many millions of pounds in salaries, I think it's very difficult because they have to be funded from somewhere.
Yes.
And ends up fans paying it.
Yeah, but the only reason that money is even swilling around in the system, though, is because of the broadcast companies. And the broadcast companies are now saying, oh, well, this is awful, isn't it? Somebody's actually come and outbid us. And now we're upset. They weren't upset when they outbid everybody else. I mean, when Sky basically took all of the rights to show live Premier League football away from practically everybody else, apart from BT Sport, which you have to pay for. You know, nobody complained then.
No, they didn't. And, you know, it has priced some companies out of the market, so they can't cover all the matches they'd like to. And so fans, if they can't get to the match, can't see it.
No.
And I think disappointing.
And I watched.
It's all this business about far too much money swilling around in the football arena.
Yes, but what I'm saying, Pauline, and I'm not having a go at you here, I'm just saying that, you know, that genie was out of the bottle many, many decades ago. You know, when they started paying, you know, Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, you know, £500,000 a week. You know, are you seriously telling me that was not the beginning of the end?
Well, it was, and I think that that's such a shame. My biggest worry now is if that's gone down, if we're going down this route with football, what happens to cricket, what happens to rugby as well? And they're much more, I believe, much cheaper sports for people to go and watch, much more grassroots organised, and there are more people involved in it from the grassroots than there are in football. It's very much people who have money in football. But Tracy Crouch, I'm sure, will do a good job because she is a football coach and referee. So I think she'll do a good job looking at this on behalf of the government. I think she's the right person to do it.
Well, she may well be, but it's a kind of pointless meeting being held today. Boris Johnson's going to meet with the FA. I think he's going to meet with the Premier League. He's going to meet with all the people who don't want it to happen. The people who do want it to happen will make it happen, because if you looked at the share price of Manchester United yesterday, up 10% in New York, Juventus share price in Italy up 20%. The people who've got the money, the people who invest in the club, obviously want it to happen.
Well, they do, because they want the return and to be able to fund even higher paid players. And that's just going to price some clubs out of the market, because they just won't be able to afford those high prices for decent players, so they'll have to go for second-rate players. So, I mean, it is a big worry about the amount of money that controls football.
Yeah.
And I find it astonishing, and I find it difficult to understand why people are so keen on football for that very reason. Because it used to be you had local players playing. I mean, I'm talking a very long time ago, I know. But now you're lucky if you have anybody that's local,
yeah,
or anybody from this country. You very often have most of your players are from abroad.
Yeah.
So it's not local football as we used to know it. And I think that's disappointing.
Yeah. And that's why I find, because I mean, the thing I hate the most, Pauline, in life is hypocrisy. And I can't stand all of this bleating that people are now doing about how awful it all is, as if it wasn't awful, you know, the day before yesterday. And it wasn't awful last week, or it wasn't awful last year, you know, or when UEFA decided to change the Champions League by actually expanding the number of games that were played in order to make more revenue for themselves.
Yeah, maybe one of the reasons is there are too many games being played now, and therefore these Super League teams, not all of whom I believe are Super League, have decided to go into another league, so they don't have to play quite so many, but they still earn the money.
I mean, do you think that by and large this is really as big an issue for this country as the newspapers, for example, are making it out to be?
Well, I think the newspapers get onto a bandwagon of football, and it is a big thing for people in this country, and then keep going and going and going. But it's the same with any news story. I mean, like last week, sadly, we were mourning Prince Philip's death, but it was wall-to-wall coverage, not just in newspapers, but on the radio, on television. The BBC did nothing but Prince Philip most of the time. So I think the media are their own worst enemies. It's the same. I went back to where I stay and wanted to watch the news before 10 o'clock last night. I put Sky on. Sky had the trial in America. I put BBC on. They had the trial in America. So it was the same story, absolutely the same view, but just a different commentator. And they're obsessed because they follow each other. And I think that's the problem. And that's where things like talk radio, which have popped up, are really good, because you look at different issues. And I don't think you do follow the normal, the mainstream, if you like, the mainstream people, because I think people are fed up with it. Because I had no choice of news last night, absolutely none on the television.
No. Well, you know, you can always put talk radio on your TV if you've got YouTube on there, and you can watch us on there, and it's far more entertaining,
well,
I can assure you.
I'm not sure where I stay's got it, but I can do that at home.
Excellent stuff. Now, the big story, of course, yesterday, which when I switched on Sky in the afternoon, I couldn't believe they weren't covering, was the Keir Starmer rumpus down in Bath, where he tried to get into a pub and made a complete and utter hash of it. I mean, you've been very stalwart in backing hospitality throughout this this period of the pandemic, Pauline, and you've urged the government to move quicker on opening up pubs. I mean, you probably I would imagine you have some sympathy for the landlord, Rod Humphreys, who, I must say, people have said, oh, he was ranting and raving. Well, he didn't start ranting and raving. He was actually quite calm, and he was explaining things to the leader of the opposition. I think it's ridiculous that he's been vilified in some way.
Well, I agree. I mean, nobody should use any form of violence to get their point across. But I think the pent-up frustration from hospitality owners is immense. I went out for dinner to support a local business at the weekend, and they spent a fortune putting up a marquee that was open at the ends, buying new furniture, buying new plants to make it look decent, lots of heaters. And yet we walked through the building where we would normally eat if we go there, and it's empty. It's just chairs stacked up because they can't use inside. They could have used inside and left all the doors open.
Yeah.
And I feel so frustrated, because this organisation, along with thousands and thousands of others, had already spent money making it COVID secure indoors. They can't use indoors yet. They can only use outdoors. Now, it was perfectly comfortable. We were perfectly warm. The food was good. Everything was lovely. But they shouldn't have to do it.
No.
Not when we have so few people going into hospital and so few deaths. In fact, I read today that there are fewer deaths than people who die on the
road. Well, four people died yesterday of COVID. You know, that's fewer than people have died on the roads, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And that is just crazy when we get to that stage that we are still so paranoid about COVID. And yes, there might be a variant come along. There might be a variant that the vaccine doesn't completely destroy. But we have that with flu.
Exactly.
And people die from flu every year. And, you know, I just feel very strongly that we should be listening to the data and not the dates. But it's the other way around.
Yes.
We're still hooked on dates. And for me, we've shown how well we've done with the vaccine. Everybody in my office has had their first vaccine. I'm lucky I've had my second already. So we are pretty safe people to go out now.
Of course.
And, of course, nobody talks about the numbers who had COVID and recovered, especially those who were asymptomatic, who actually have some immunity. There's a huge amount of immunity out there. Mm. And in Derbyshire, there are swathes of the countryside with no COVID whatsoever. And it's towns, villages, the whole countryside has got no COVID.
No.
And where I live, all the way around, like the bubble around us, there is no COVID. And yet we still have to sit outside when we go for dinner.
I know, it's absolutely mad. And as far as the Starmer incident is concerned, I mean, any violence that was proffered was by Keir Starmer's heavies, who tried to stop Rod from entering his own pub. And at that point, he then, quite rightly, got pretty worked up about it all. But I think the thing that I found despicable, Pauline, was after the event, Keir Starmer gave two statements in which he basically said that the guy was a COVID denier. He more or less said that he wasn't sure that he thought that COVID existed, thereby sort of aligning him with some mad conspiracy theorist. Labour Press put out a statement saying this, right, that Keir Starmer was confronted by someone spreading dangerous misinformation about the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, that's not what he was doing. He was quoting from ONS figures. And I find that incredible. And Keir Starmer hasn't apologised. He's actually made it worse.
Yeah. And in fact, Bath, my daughter lives in Bath, so I know it well, is so low on the index of places with COVID. It's been consistently low.
Yeah.
There's so few cases there that he should be allowed to open up. He should be allowed to serve his customers. And people have a choice. You don't have to go inside. And these places that have opened up outside venues, people have a choice. And I think you could choose to go inside or you could choose to sit outside. And it would give those people who have not earned a penny for a year some opportunity of catching up and paying their staff. Because yes, they've been furloughed, but they've only had 80%. And the owners of the businesses have still had to pay their NI. So they've had to fork out month after month after month. So it's difficult for these businesses. And I do feel passionately that they must be allowed to open up. It's no good saying, well, we'll give you a COVID passport to go to a football match, which again, it's being put right at the top as if that's the most important. But maybe that's because there are more men in the cabinet than there are women. And I do think we should be looking at...
I'm not sure any of them know much. I'm not sure any of them know much about football, to be honest, Pauline.
No, maybe not.
I don't think they know much about pubs either. I mean, they're not like any of the men I know. I mean, they don't seem to do anything that I do. But I mean, can you ever imagine also saying to one of your voters, because this guy identifies himself as a Labour voter, you know, I don't need to take any lectures from the likes of you. It's incredible.
It's so patronising. It's so rude. And I'm afraid, I think Keir Starmer's lost it over COVID. He doesn't know which way to turn. He doesn't know whether to back the government or not back the government. And he's sort of swivelling round, not sure what to do. And I think he's lost the plot on this.
Yes. Well, I mean, he was later pictured on his own Twitter feed, Keir Starmer, and he was almost mocking the guy. He put out a tweet of him sitting outside a pub in Camden called the Prince Albert, right, which he didn't actually identify, but everybody else knew. He had a pint of beer in front of him. He said, better late than never. The only weird thing was the two people he was sitting with had half their drinks already consumed, and his hadn't been touched.
Yeah, Yes. So he'd just gone and sat down there with them.
And said, please take a picture and make it look as if I'm in the pub in a place where they like me.
Yeah.
But guess where? Camden.
Yes. Which is a different place than Bath.
It is, very much so. But listen, Pauline, as ever, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. Pauline Latham, MP, very sensible woman. A woman who's also, by the way, backed hospitality all the way. A woman who would not be turned away from a pub in her constituency, unlike Keir Starmer. So Keir Starmer, I think that was his Gordon Brown bigot moment, wasn't it? Surely, to heavens, the party now has to say, this guy is an absolute liability. Because not only did he insult a man who said he was a Labour voter, not only was he dismissive, not only was he condescending, not only did his heavies try and prevent the man from entering his own premises and try to sort of, you know, manhandle him in a way which some would say could also have constituted assault. Not only that, but he then comes out afterwards, gives a statement as if to say that the landlord in question was some kind of conspiracy theorist. His quote was, "I'm not even sure if he thinks COVID exists." Now, he never gave that impression at all. He just never did. I think it's a disgrace, and I think Starmer needs to apologise before it's too late.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So now Prince William wants to save the people's game. Well, that certainly will put the kibosh on it, I would have thought. Let's talk now to Rod Little, Sunday Times columnist, journalist, associate editor at The Spectator. Rod, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well indeed. I mean, reading some of the statements from UEFA, I mean, it's very difficult to keep a straight face, really. I've been saying, apparently they've been calling these six clubs snakes, which is a former colleague of mine used to say, it's a bit like being told to stand up straight by the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Yes,
I mean, you know, these are the people that make £3 billion a year from the Champions League and deliberately extended it so they could make even more money.
Yeah, and don't forget that when they did that to the Champions League, there was exactly the same level of outrage. You know, the same outrage when they formed the Champions League, and very similar outrage indeed back in 1992 when the Premier League was formed.
Yes.
And the smaller clubs all argued, yeah, this is going to create a Super League and we're being cut out of the money and everything. It went ahead.
Of course.
It went ahead with modifications, and that's what will happen this time, I think.
I think so. When you see that the share price of Manchester United's shares went up 10% in New York, Juventus went up 20% on the stock exchange in Milan, I mean, you know, there's only one direction of travel here.
There is only one direction of travel. I mean, what tends to happen is that these clubs put forward a proposal which is born from utter and complete greed and avarice, and everyone gets very, very outraged, and then everybody starts to talk about it, and eventually, somewhere down the line, a modified version will come into effect.
Yeah.
I don't have much doubt about that. the thing that cheers me up is that Tottenham Hotspur regard it as a big club. It's hilarious. They last won the league title in the year that Adolf Eichmann was on trial in Israel. And the farthing was legal tender in Great Britain.
Yes. I mean, this is it. I mean, you take your pick, don't you? I mean, I was sort of joshing earlier on that you as a Millwall fan will obviously have a view on the Super League, but somebody's texted in already to say, well, hang on a minute, you know, if somebody from Saudi Arabia bought Millwall, you might get in it.
Yeah, well, indeed, we might, except I think we're very high up the list of investors at the moment. The one area of the country which hasn't actually reacted with outrage are people like me who support Millwall.
Yeah.
Because we don't give a toss.
Right.
We don't care. And I've seen lots of texts from people saying, you know, Leicester fans and Southampton fans and Everton fans, though, goodness knows, Everton, if Everton are a smaller club than Tottenham Hotspur, this is a world turned upside down. But who are quite pleased with this. You know, get rid of them. We're sick of them. We don't like them.
But here's the thing. The proof of the pudding is this. Because if, say, for example, the Premier League did kick these six teams out, that should be, on face of it, good news for teams like Leicester, who might win on a regular basis. However, it wouldn't be good news for them because Sky would basically cancel their current contract and give them a lot less money.
Oh, I don't know if they would. I don't know if they would. You see, this is always what's been said. And what was said when the Premier League was started, for example, and I was one of the people saying this has been... You see, I think Boris and me, to a degree, still consider football to be men with coal blackened faces in fat caps wandering along on a Saturday afternoon right. at 3 o'clock to cheer on their local heroes. Well, you know, yeah, 1925, sure, yeah. but not now. And I complained about the formation of the Premier League, thinking that it would create, impoverishment for the poorer clubs and just this horrible sort of set league where the same clubs win every year. That hasn't happened.
No.
What's actually happened is that capitalism has worked and the money has trickled down to the degree that the Championship, which is obviously the league which I take most interest in, is now the third most watched football league in the world.
And in many ways, actually, it's a far more competitive and interesting football to watch than much of the Premier League. Because I've said, you know, yeah, it's all very well watching, you know, the big clashes between Liverpool and Manchester United, perhaps, but they're not all brilliant. You know, when you watch Sheffield United taking on poor old Kevin O'Sullivan's Fulham. You know, you practically want to, you know, slash your own wrist to not have to watch it. But the point is that, you know, in the end, we're talking about these places like UEFA, like FIFA, you know, who have awarded World Cups to Qatar and to Russia as the great bastions of the supporter. I mean, are you having a laugh?
Yeah, no, it's ludicrous. It's utterly ludicrous. And, nor do I regularly see Boris on the terraces when I'm going to a football game. I mean, these are people who know nothing about football, the people who are getting involved in this. And, you know, what will happen in the end is a modified version of what they're suggesting. And it may just be good for the game. It may trouser more money.
Well, exactly. And also, in the end, Rod, you know, progress, I'm afraid, is progress. And you know, Sky basically bought the league and made it their own. They then had to share a little bit of it with BT Sport. They've now had to share some of it with Amazon, who live stream games as well. And it's the way things are going. You know, Netflix exists because that's how people want to consume television. You know, in the same way that Perez, the head of Real Madrid, has come out and said, look, we've got a problem here in the football world. Young people do not want to watch football. They don't want to go to games. But what they do have is huge fans, numbers of them in China.
Yeah, no, indeed. I mean, looking at the proposals at the moment, I don't think it works. The way that they're proposing. Mm. I mean, for a start, it's not a European Super League.
No.
There's no Bayern Munich.
Right.
There's no Bayern Munich. There's no Paris Saint-Germain. There's no Borussia Dortmund. There's no Ajax.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just it's just basically the six British clubs with some Latino ponces.
Well, they've brought Atletico Madrid in, who have never been a superpower of a team. They've done quite well of recent years because they had a couple of decent managers and one decent player. But they're not a super club, are they?
No, they're not by any stretch of the imagination. There's more of one than Tottenham. I have to return to this. I actually worked out, being a nerd, that Tottenham's average position in the Premier League since it was formed is eighth. that is their average position over the last 30 years.
Right.
And their attendances, you know, until the last couple of years, they were regularly 9th or 10th for attendances, you know, below West Ham, below Everton, below Newcastle, below Sunderland. The notion that they're a big club is an absurdity. The only way they're big is bigger debt than most third world countries.
Yes. But I mean, and that in the end is the point of all of this, isn't it? It's all about money. It's been all about money for a very, very long time.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
I mean, if you look at the way that football is going to go, it can't stay still. It can't stand still. It can't stay where it is because the business is changing. I said this yesterday to Mark Saggers, that proof of the pudding about audiences and crowds at football games and attendance is that they've managed to make loads of money this year with having nobody watching them.
It's been utterly remarkable, incredible. You know, we've been saying, commentators have been saying for decades that this bubble must burst. And yet, in a season where the fans aren't allowed into the grounds, and football's gone from strength to strength.
Yeah.
You know, this bubble will not burst. And of course, the reason is that the fans don't matter anymore.
No.
The paying fans, for most clubs in the Premier League, the paying fans aren't really anything to consider. They are for the likes of Millwall and for Akron to Stanley and Darlington, but not higher up.
No, I mean, one of my favourite images this morning is this picture on the front page of the Telegraph. Created by the poor, stolen by the rich. These are five young Manchester United fans with a banner that they've made standing in front of Old Trafford, perhaps one of the richest clubs in the world, with one of the biggest stadiums in the world, built in a part of Salford, which has now become, sort of Manchester United land. And, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's almost comical.
Created by the poor. Football was created by the toffs at rugby school.
Well, exactly. But there is this kind of nonsense. The Mirror's got, Bill Shankly's great speech on the front about socialism and what he thinks football's all about. And it's all very nice and kind of cosy and, makes you feel all fuzzy and warm. But it's not actually reality.
No, it's not reality at all. No, it's a big business. I don't watch nearly very much because, to be absolutely honest, I get bored of watching Arsenal versus Spurs and, Man United versus Liverpool all the time. I like the more interesting games. I'd even watch your lot, Fulham,
They're not my lot. Absolutely not. No, they're Kevin O'Sullivan's lot. I don't really have a lot.
Right.
I went to America where they take sport much more seriously than we do here and where everyone's complaining this has all come from. And when I came back... as a boy, I watched Celtic win the European Cup and Manchester United win the European Cup, so I supported both of them, as you would expect. But my two home teams should have either been Arsenal or Spurs, but I hated both of them. Couldn't bring myself to be a fan of either. And speaking of Arsenal, funnily enough, Piers Morgan is talking about, the terrible loss of ordinary people's games. And this is a guy who's got about four boxes at the Emirates, love him indeed. As I do. He's not exactly the voice of the people.
No, and indeed, if you're taking your kid to see Arsenal play, it's precluded. If you're working class, you simply cannot afford it.
No.
It's so expensive. I have to say, I've been cheered up this year because I work on a Saturday, most weeks.
Yeah.
I can very rarely get to games on a Saturday. And I follow, which I pay £10 a game for, and I've seen every single Millwall game this year.
Mm.
And it's been great. And that's a transformation which was at first resisted and scorned. But it's been great.
Absolutely right. And, we everything moves on. I'm this dewy-eyed sort of, harking back to history and, men kicking a football around while 100,000 people stand watching. I find it quite pathetic, actually.
Yeah, it's. I think you'll find over the next few weeks, I mean, obviously the clubs are going to complain who aren't included in this top six, particularly those absolutely rightful view that they should be in the top six, like Villas and Newcastle and so on. I think that once the ordinary fan gets to talk about it, they're a lot more sanguine about it, and I don't think there'll be that furore.
No, I think you make a very good point. Rod, good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Rod Little back in the Sunday Times, of course, on Sunday, talking absolute sense, saying that Spurs are not a super club. Everybody always complains whenever anything changes in the football world, and it always still goes ahead no matter what. But maybe slightly curtailed, slightly different, slightly not quite what the first version of it looks like. But there's no doubt in my mind this will happen, because that's the way football works. It's the way sport works. It's the way progress works. It's the way everything works. And for Sky, in particular, to be very sort of, shall we say, holier than thou about it, is an absolute joke, isn't it?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, without further ado, and before we speak to Tom Slater, let's just go quickly down to Bath and the Raven pub to see what went on yesterday.
I've been a Labour voter my entire life. You have failed to be the opposition. You have failed to ask where the lockdown
was
functioning.
Sorry, there's a car just behind. Can we just...
Do you understand?
Can we go in?
Thousands of people have died because you have failed to do your job and ask the real questions. Well, I am telling you now, and I hope this goes out, you have failed this country.
That man is not allowed in my pub. Get out of my pub. Go on. Get out of my pub.
Get out of my pub. I mean, a lot of people were putting up memes of Peggy Mitchell from EastEnders, and I said yesterday on Twitter, maybe Keir Starmer would have been better off watching Peggy Mitchell in EastEnders rather than watching Line of Duty for his little quip last week in Prime Minister's Questions. Let's talk to Tom Slater, Deputy Editor of Spiked Online. Tom, I know we're going to talk about criminals in a minute, but that was some afternoon's work by Keir Starmer, wasn't it?
It was pretty impressive when you, you know, so Keir Starmer has a sense of being somewhat out of touch to try and counter that by getting thrown out of a pub and then accusing the landlord of being some sort of conspiracy theorist. It's not really working well for him, is it? But at the same time, I think it just sums up the approach a lot of politicians like Keir Starmer have to the public. You know, they're there to, again, just kind of appreciate them rather than actually hold them to account. So I think his response to that definitely indicated some of that kind of contempt you see from
yeah. people. I'm quite surprised as well that they went so hard on it afterwards, you know, because there wasn't any need for that. I mean, first of all, I think it shouldn't have happened in the first place. You know, I don't think the guy was being out of order, certainly not when they were outside. Keir Starmer could have easily, you know, placated him, taken him to one side and said, look, you know, OK, let's hear what you have to say. Let me talk to you about, you know, how terrible it's been for you, what you've been through, you know, why. And let me explain to you why, blah, blah, blah. But instead of which, he goes off, storms out, is you know, terrible footage, which you haven't yet seen there, of his bodyguard sort of manhandling the guy, trying to stop him getting into his own pub. And then he goes out and says, oh, I don't think he even thinks that COVID exists. And then Labour press team puts out a statement saying that this guy was spreading dangerous misinformation, which he wasn't.
No, it's really shocking. And it just goes to show that anyone who wants to push back against that consensus around lockdown, around these restrictions, just gets smeared at this point. And to see someone who's trying to, again, claw his party back to some level of respectability to engage in that, I think it's really shocking. And as you say, the manhandling of him by Keir Starmer's bodyguards. Yeah. I mean, if one of Boris Johnson's bodyguards would have done that, all of the usual suspects in the commentary would be telling us that we're, you know, descending into something like Putin's Russia.
Yes.
Yeah, time when it's who they support, different rules apply, it seems like.
It really does. And I mean, do you think this is going to prove to be his sort of Gordon Brown bigot moment? I mean, I mean, he's already in a pretty bad state, old Starmer, when it comes to his popularity, even with his own party.
No, certainly. I think that's the main point, really, is that he's got a huge problem with supporting the country as it is. I mean, the Tories have been maintaining a double-digit poll lead amongst working-class voters for the best part of the last year, as far as I can tell. So, again, it's just kind of, in a way, it's kind of just one small thing on top of the pile for all of his problems and clawing Labour back to supposedly being the party of ordinary men and women, which it certainly isn't at this point.
Yes, and I mean, I suppose Boris might take the moral high ground tomorrow at Prime Minister's Questions, but I hope he doesn't.
Let's see Boris Johnson get thrown out of some pubs as well.
Well, I mean, he was in one yesterday, and there was a picture that went out, and he was absolutely fine, not a problem, you know.
I mean, he is responsible for these rules. Keir Starmer might not have opposed them, but he is the one who implemented them.
Well, that is the unfortunate state of affairs, and which brings us nicely on, really, to the report that we're looking at this morning, HM Inspectorate of Constabulary Fire and Rescue Services, basically more or less admitting that the only thing the police have been doing in recent months has been sort of arresting people for breaching coronavirus restrictions and not much else.
Now, this is really shocking. As you say, avoiding arresting criminals during the pandemic, writing off offences as no further action, more often than not. You saw just an explicit admittance, really, that there was this reduced service, a shift towards kind of more desk-based working, people waiting on a kind of web chat for 2 hours to report serious crimes where previously those have been sorted out over the phone. And this is very serious. You know, there's some cases which are pointed to wanted criminals remaining on the loose because those things weren't chased up. And meanwhile, as you say, I think I'm right in saying up until December last year, 32,000 fixed penalty notices, fines were issued to people for breaking the lockdown rules. Some of them, as we know, quite farcical and small instances of breaching those rules. So a real question for the police about their priorities during this pandemic, not just their resources, but how they're using those resources.
Indeed. And I noticed this weekend that there was a sort of clarion call put out by the government to local authorities to say, you know, would you mind sort of easing up a little bit on your, you know, clamping down on people who might not be adhering to the rules. I don't actually know anybody at the moment, Tom, that knows what any of the rules are anymore.
Well, I think the problem during the pandemic is that a lot of the police didn't seem to know what the rules were either. And I've had some sympathy with the fact that, you know, you had the lockdown regulations changing, new ones coming in at a minute to midnight the day before they were brought in. A lot of human rights barristers struggled to keep track of what the rules were. But then you even saw police chiefs. You know, there was that police chief in Northamptonshire who gave a press conference in which he said they might have to start inspecting trolleys for illicit goods, despite the fact there was never any restrictions on what you could buy at the supermarket. This was the big Easter egg scandal last lockdown, if you'll remember, this time last year. So again, I think even though a lot of people don't know the rules themselves at this point, throughout this pandemic, it seems like a lot of the police don't know what the rules are either.
No, that's right. And I mean, Priti Patel has commissioned this study. And I mean, I don't wish to be unkind to Priti Patel, but she commissions an awful lot of studies. She makes an awful lot of speeches. She makes an awful lot of promises. But I don't actually see anything changing. And I mean, from the tightening of the borders to the clamping down on the illegal dinghies arriving from France to almost everything else that she says she's going to completely rearrange, nothing's really changed, has it?
I think this government is like this on all kinds of issues, where they kind of do want to signal that they're interested in taking certain institutions to task, to sorting out the priorities of the police, to sorting out the BBC, whatever it happens to be. The substance of it never really materializes. And I think when you're talking about the police, this is so important because the police were being called into question way before the coronavirus pandemic and the terrifying overreach to sometimes quite silly overreach that we've seen with those lockdown rules. You know, the fact that there was that Times investigation in 2017, which found 9 people a day were being arrested for posting offensive things online. Meanwhile, you want people out in the public, you know, often even when they've been the victims of a burglary or they have their car being stolen, the police are basically there just to open and close an investigation so that you can sort out the insurance. Right. You know, this is many people's experience of police. They're often not there when they need them. So, you know, even before the coronavirus pandemic and the ridiculous scenes that we've seen taking place, the police were really called into question. So action does seem to need to be taken. But as you say, Priti Patel seems to just want to kind of signal to her base, as it were, rather than do anything.
Yeah, it's like a PR campaign without any real substance behind it. I remember back in sort of beginning again of the pandemic, when things were sort of slightly tighter, I suppose, than they are now. Loads of people who travelled down on the M5 to get to Devon were sort of stopped and turned back and handed £200 penalties, all of which turned out to be unenforceable and all of which ended up in the bin. So an awful lot of what they've issued ticket-wise isn't even legal, it seems.
No, completely. There was a story back last April where there were about 30 instances of the police issuing fines to children,
right?
Which is you know, fixed penalty notices should not be issued to children in any circumstance in this way. And also, as you say, just situations where the police were just had become kind of a law unto themselves. They were kind of making up the rules as they went along. I remember Dorset Police, which was also enforcing those kinds of travel restrictions to people driving a short way to exercise and so on, was not prescribed in law at all. But when they were confronted by Big Brother Watch, the human rights group, about this, they said explicitly, we don't care what the law says. This is about the spirit of the restrictions and how we're going to achieve them. So they really have been a law unto themselves at this point. They really do need to be reined in.
Right. And so if the government have now said to local authorities, don't give people such a hard time, presumably that's what's led to what some of the scenes are that we've seen, which I'm not objecting to, by the way, of lots of people being out and about, you know, lots of pubs with gardens being absolutely rammed. You know, there's no question in a lot of cases of people following the supposed COVID rules, is there?
No, I think that's right. And I think at the end of the day, you know, mercifully, we don't have enough police to be a police state. The point at which people are
I'm starting to thank God that we don't have enough police.
Exactly. I mean, it's been a bit of a wake-up call for many people, I think. But at the end of the day, when the public are starting to relax, when they are seeing the risk evaporate because of the rollout of the vaccines and all the rest of it, they are going to start to bend and break these rules even more so than they might have been previously. And that's one thing which I think is kind of undervalued in this. The public kind of led us into lockdown in the first place, people starting to take more care, people starting to be more careful. The government were kind of chasing after public opinion in that respect, and I think the public will lead us out of it again. And I think that's what this kind of relaxing of the enforcement, you like, is a recognition of, is that just public support for these kinds of draconian restrictions is starting to move away finally.
And I think it will be interesting to see how all this sort of unfurls over the course of the next few months, because I've always believed, and I've been saying it now for a few weeks, that as the lockdown lifts and as things start to become more doable, if you like, more and more people will start to do them. And more people will start to think, yeah, well, maybe I will go back to work, you know, because there are my friends that are all in the city and they're all going out for a drink on Friday at 5 o'clock. And so maybe I will actually go to work that day. You know, that kind of thing will start to happen. And I wonder where organisations like the Metropolitan Police and other police forces, and where that leaves them, because they've had this year of quite intense kind of difficulty and not really knowing what their job is. And I wonder how that's going to end up.
No, it's going to be interesting because, as you say, they're just going to have to take a new kind of relaxed approach to rules that certain police services in particular, it varies a lot across the country as far as how harshly they were being imposed. We're seriously enforcing them. But I think the problem is that they've still got big questions to answer in the longer term about what are the police for? And I think one thing that has really concerned people over this pandemic, even people who might previously have been quite supportive of the police, is that as soon as you hand them more draconian powers, they grab onto them with glee. And I think whether we're talking about the enforcement of the lockdown restrictions, whether or not we're talking about the rise of police spending more time on Twitter than they do actually policing people's communities at this point, you're starting to see that question being asked them about what is it are you actually for and what are your priorities? Because over the past year and beyond, we've seen that oftentimes their priorities are severely screwed up.
Yeah. And also, if you have been in some way arrested or charged with anything during this period, you know, would you have the right as an individual to have that expunged from your record in some way? Because it might be that you should be able to do that.
No, that's a huge question. It's also a question with some of the restrictions on kind of policing speech and discussion that I'm sure you've touched on many times in the show. You know, this phenomenon, these non-crime hate incidents, which are Freedom of Information Request last year found 120,000 of these things recorded. These things can show up on extended DBS checks, and they basically just boil down to someone being offended by something someone potentially posted on the internet, for instance, reporting it to the police, it not being investigated, and it just being logged. So all of these kinds of things I think are really concerning about encroaching on people's liberties in that respect. But it feels like now people are starting to wake up to that level of police overreach and how we might tackle it.
Yeah, because another piece I was looking at this morning is about these COVID loan fraudsters and how many people have managed to get money out of the government as a result of them being very generous, you'd have to say, and you can't fault them, I suppose, for that. But obviously, like all government schemes, it's got full of holes, and loads of people have ripped them off for money that they've either borrowed and not paid back and disappeared off and, you know, folded the company or formed companies to just get free money and all of that. And they're now basically saying the Revenue and Customs people will probably never be able to prosecute any of them.
Yeah, I know, it's really, really striking. I mean, you can kind of understand when they set up all of these loan schemes, etc. I mean, Rishi Sunak said this quite explicitly to his credit, that, you know, we're prioritising speed and ease over these kinds of concerns. But at the same time, you would hope there would be some kind of recourse, given the fact that, unfortunately, even at a time of national crisis, there are always going to be some people who are going to try and take advantage of it. Surely there's some payback.
Yeah, there really does have to be. And as far as the sort of the rest of what we now have left as April is concerned, I suppose. I mean, I think if the weather continues to be as nice as this, I mean, I think we're going to be basically out of lockdown in about a week because, you know, there's going to be so many people out and about, so many people getting involved in pubs and restaurants and all the rest of it, that, as you say, the police won't be able to handle it.
I think that's right. And I think that what we're really seeing is that people are starting to relax because they're making a very rational judgment. You know, they might have been vaccinated. Certainly their elderly and vulnerable relatives will have been vaccinated. They know that we're de-risking COVID by the day, basically, through this vaccine rollout, regardless of how much Boris Johnson seems to want to play it down. And I think that's the point where just the consent for these restrictions we've been living under will start to melt away. The problem is, and one thing we've got to be really careful about, is the way in which some of these restrictions live on in statute in one form or another after the pandemic, which we're already seeing that in relation to protests. We're already seeing that in other ways. And I think that's the thing we've got to work, because it feels like the lockdown itself is starting to evaporate. but how those restrictions might live on in one way or another is going to be a
big. Well, Mark Harper mentioned that this morning on Julie Hartley Brewer's show on Talk Radio, where he was talking about, you know, June the 21st is this kind of magical date where everything's supposed to be lifted and we are supposed to return to normal and it will be the old normal. There won't be social distancing. There shouldn't be mask wearing. But he said that he spotted in the statutes that everything will disappear aside from some COVID regulations, which is all a bit vague.
No, that contradiction is what we've really got to keep our eye on. Yeah. 21st of June has been presented as the kind of big liberation point. But as you say, if you look at some of those government statements, if you look at the reviews, which are still ongoing, questions around what restrictions hospitality venues might have to exist under, it isn't really going to be that big bang, it seems like. Some of these could live on well on later into the year because the government has taken this ultra-cautious approach. So yeah. I think we've got to remain very eagle-eyed and sceptical of the way this easing of the lockdown happens. Because slow as it is, I think it's even a fair bit slower than we've been led to believe.
Yeah, you may well be right. Vigilance will be the watchword. Tom, thank you very much indeed. Tom Slater, Deputy Editor of Spiked Online there. I think it makes a very good point. I mean, if you've been fined or you have been arrested or something during this pandemic in any way, shape or form, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to know what your experience was. And I'd like to know what they're telling you about how long anything like a fine or anything like an arrest actually stays on your record. Are you able to get rid of it? Are you able to ask for them to strike it from the record like you're supposed to be able to ask them to strike your DNA from any records that they might have if you are found not to be charged with something, but they've swabbed you in a police station?
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So the world and everybody in it seems to be very worked up about this Super League plan that Manchester United, Tottenham, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester City have decided to get themselves involved in. Over at Talk Sport, you literally see the place throbbing as I walk through there with people getting different opinions, phone calls, fans ringing in saying how terrible it is that football sold out. Well, I think football sold out a long time ago. We're going to talk now to Jamie O'Hara, former Premier League footballer, TalkSport host, of course, as well. Jamie, very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I mean, I've been saying, and I seem to be a bit of a lone voice here, that, you know, since the advent of pay TV, Sky TV coming in, you know, hosing down football clubs with loads and loads of money to carry their football all around the world, you know, UEFA making $3 billion every single year out of Champions League football. It's a bit rich now for all these politicians and even Prince William to come out and go, oh, they're all terribly greedy. I mean, they've been greedy for years, haven't they?
No, I mean, I agree with you on that. I mean, I think a lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon of criticising sort of owners and football all of a sudden when, you know, they need to be looking at their own industries and what they're, you know, what they're doing. It's very quick when it seems like you're going to take money out of someone's pocket that they're very quick to jump on it and say, no, you can't do that. But when it's involved in, say, you know, racism or something like that, then it takes ages to get sorted out. But, you know, just on the whole Sky thing and that situation, Mike, is that, you know, that needed to be changed. That needed to evolve. And, you know, Sky did that. And yeah, all right, everyone got rich from it and the clubs all got rich. But there was still fair competition. There was still chances for, you know, like Sheffield United and your Bournemouth to come up through the leagues, like Manchester City when they were playing in the third tier, to come up through the leagues and get into the Premier League. This European Super League that everyone's going on about that is a closed shop. It's for the big wigs, the big teams with all the money who, you know, basically don't want competition. They don't want relegation. So, you know, you can't, it's hard to compare it to that when this is a completely different module.
But it's not that they don't want relegation so much, is it? Because they're never going to be relegated. I mean, all of these teams are so wealthy that no matter how bad they perform, like Arsenal and Tottenham and Chelsea and even Manchester United in recent years haven't been brilliant every single year, but they've never been in danger of actually being relegated. And I can't imagine that they really ever would be because of the money that they've got coming in from their sponsorships, the money they've got from all sorts of deals around the world. And the football world, the football world is changing. I mean, the guy that owns Real Madrid is saying that youngsters now in Spain don't really follow football in the same way. So they need to reach out to China, to Indonesia, to America to get the fan base that can make them some money.
Yeah, but I understand it. That, look, they won't get relegated. Arsenal are not going to get relegated. Liverpool are not going to get relegated. But what unsuccessful seasons mean for them is not getting into European football, which costs them a lot of money. But that's competition. That's fair game. You look at Leicester, you look at West Ham, who've had the opportunity, get the opportunity now to get into Europe, to get that opportunity. They want to take that away. They want to just, no matter how they play, no matter how they finish a season, no matter how they do against Barcelona, Real Madrid, you're guaranteed to play them the season after. Yeah. And, you know, who they don't deserve that. Arsenal don't deserve that. They've not been in the Champions League for four seasons. Tottenham don't deserve that. I played for Tottenham. They don't deserve to have that authority over the rest of English football clubs. It's not fair, and you know that's the biggest problem. I understand football's evolving, and yeah, there's, you know, talk about 4 billion fans around the world, but it's still English football clubs. It's still a tradition. There's still history that you have to uphold, and you know that's how football's been made in this country. That's how it's been brought up. That the fans on the, you know, from Tottenham, the fans from, you know, Liverpool City Centre who support their club through thick and thin, they want to be able to watch them, and they want to see them big games against Newcastle's and your Burnley's and the FA Cup games and things like that. Not, you don't want to see them play Real Madrid and Barcelona every week. I think it'll,
well, no, you don't.
Wear off.
But I think there's a way, is there not, of making this into something which could be big, could be good for everybody. I mean, it's the only reason they wouldn't be in the Premier League is the Premier League say we wouldn't let you play in it. You know, they don't have to take that view. They could take the view that says, actually, yes, we want you to continue to play in the Premier League. And you look at something like the Super League as if it's some kind of, you know, World Club Cup. I mean, there's plenty of ridiculous competitions around the world that they play that they don't need to play.
But it's a plastic competition then, Mike. You know, it's not real. It's not, there's no merit in that. You know, it's a guaranteed you're there every season. It's like playing in the Aldi Cup that Spurs win every pre-season, you know, and they go to Hong Kong and Malaysia.
Yeah.
It's not real. And there's not, I don't think there's success in that. I don't think there's, you know, I don't think people would want to tune into that. The reason we love watching Champions League football when it gets to their latter stages, because you might play Real Madrid once or twice, you know, in over two seasons. And, you know, you look at Leicester or West Ham, who may get in the Champions League this year, they could play Bayern Munich and PSG. That, there's merit in competition.
But that'd be a waste of time, wouldn't it? Because they'd get knocked out.
Of course, they might. But that's the whole, it's the fair game of the chance that they could win. And that's the love and the passion for football, is that the poor can beat the rich. And, you know, the weak can
yeah, but nobody's poor. Yeah, but nobody's poor anymore in the Premier League. That's the thing that makes me laugh, that all this nonsense about all the fans, you know, have been keeping this sport afloat. The fans have been forgotten many, many decades ago. You know, they forgot about the fans when they started charging, as I've said before, £90 for a replica shirt, and then they change it next year, so you have to buy another one for your kids. And if you've got a lot of kids, it's very expensive. You know, when they charge the amount of money they charge, you know, for a hamburger or a hot dog at White Hart Lane, or when you go to Wembley and you're ending up paying something like £30 for two pints and two hot dogs. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I mean, you know, it has become astronomical to go and watch a Premier League football match, and the ticket prices are ridiculous. Mm. And, you know, season tickets and merchandise. Yeah, I mean, it's become unaffordable for you know, for anyone with kids and that to go and watch it. So, you know, yeah, I agree. But then if you make a European Super League, you're adding more expense to it, because if you want to go and watch Liverpool every Tuesday, or you want to go and watch away games, you've got to get plane tickets, you've got to get hotels. You know, they could be playing in Tokyo, yep, in Malaysia. So, you know, they're not, that's costing you more money to follow your
But
team.
That's my point. It's not about the fans at home anymore. It's about televised and live streaming football. And that's where football, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, I think is going to go. In America, the NFL and the baseball leagues, they are the same. They don't relegate teams. They don't. They have a draft system where there's always fairness. It works pretty well. They've got very, very loyal fans. They all make a lot of. They all make a lot of money. Why is it not fair?
Because the teams outside of that can't get in. It's a closed shop.
There aren't any teams outside of it.
You have to have. There's loads of. Of course, outside the NFL, you have the different competitions. In the MLS, you have the leagues below, you know, you have the Tampa Rowdies and teams like that. They can't get into that league because they don't have the money.
Right, but it doesn't, what I'm saying, it doesn't affect the ability for the fans to enjoy the sport, though. Does it?
Well, it does. Well, to me, it does, because the MLS isn't fair competition. I mean, it's, you're talking about having the richest clubs who can afford to franchise a club. You can take that club wherever you want, like David Beckham's done. Yeah. I'll just create a club in Miami and call it Inter Miami and just make a club up. You know, there's no history or tradition behind that. That doesn't work over here. You can't do that. That you can't just
Why
make
not? A, Why couldn't you?
Well, but you can, but you start from the bottom and you have to build it up. Say, like what Salford City are doing. But and there's fair competition that you have to work to get to the top. You can might play against them top teams. You might lose, but you still have the opportunity to play against them.
I mean, people used to talk, Jamie, I'm sure you...
In the franchise, you don't get that.
Yeah, I'm sure you played in the FA Cup. People used to talk about the magic of the FA Cup. That's been dead and buried for years now. You know, Manchester United themselves pulled out of playing in it, if you remember, a few years back, and decided they'd go and play in some lucrative competition in South America. So this kind of romance for the fan and the old school turnstiles and, you know, kids peeking over the wall and all that, it's all very well, but it's not really true, is it?
No, I disagree. I think there's still a huge, you know, massive respect for the FA Cup. You look at the teams that are in it. I was lucky enough to play in an FA Cup final and, you know, there was still that magic and that buzz. It's for me, it's the greatest competition to be involved in. It's the FA Cup.
But most teams now don't even field a proper top team in it, do they?
Well, I'd say the Carabao Cup may be different, Mike, but the FA Cup, I think you look at, you know, you look at the teams that are in the final, they're the top teams are going to be playing the best sides. You know, you're talking about the best teams get to it because they're playing their best sides. So I think the FA Cup's still there. But that competition is for everyone. Everyone can take part of it. That's where the magic of it is. You see non-league clubs play Premier League teams and there's this great feeling about it. And that helps set them teams up for the next two or three seasons with budgets and money, because the money that they get from it. If you're talking about a closed shop competition that you can't get in, they're not going to look after the other teams that are further down the pyramid. They don't care.
Now, we've been told that some players might have refused to play. You're a professional football player, Jamie. I don't believe any professional football player will refuse to play in any league if there's money in it.
Well, they will refuse to play if it stops them playing, say, international football, right? If they get told that you're not allowed to play for your country, then, you know, you have to refuse that. But I agree with you to a certain extent, Mike. If someone says to, you know, Højbjerg at Spurs that you can either play against Burnley or Norwich next season on a Saturday and a Tuesday, or you can play against Barcelona and Real Madrid, I guarantee you he's going to choose to play against Barcelona and Real Madrid. At the end of the day, as a professional athlete, you want to play against the best teams in the world.
And especially if he gets a sweetener of 50 grand bonus every time he does it.
Again, of course. Listen, you have a short career as a professional footballer and you have to, and you know, football is a short life and you have to make as much money as you can. You also want to have fair competition. You also want to be able to play in it and say that I played in the Premier League, I played in the Champions League, you know, I played in a World Cup, not I played in the Euro Super League because I was at one of the big six clubs.
Yes, no, I think that's a good point. Jamie, great to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed. Jamie O'Hara, former Premier League footballer, of course, TalkSport host as well. Making a lot of sense from the point of view of the players. But is it really something that so far politicians should be even getting involved in? I don't think it is.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.